We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Sam, listeners, Light Years Podcast, do you ever feel like you're always on? What do you do when you need a moment to chill? How do you like to hit the reset button to get ready for what's next? There's only one beer out there that's literally made to chill, and that's Coors Light. The mountains on the bottles and cans even turn blue when your beer is cold. Wow, that's amazing. That way you always know when it's time to chill. When you need to hit reset, just open up the Coors Light. It's mountain cold refreshment and made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. And as always, celebrate.
Hey everyone, it's Lindsay Rhodes, and I've got a new podcast, The NFL Roadshow. Fun and kind of nerdy conversation about the NFL every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. I've got some amazing guests that are joining me. I'll be breaking the huddle with the top stories, previewing games. We'll get you set for the weekend fantasy with our Fantasy Friday episodes, and we'll answer some of your questions as well. So subscribe to the NFL Roadshow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And welcome to Light Years. Andy Liu is off, being as we are around the holidays. I believe he's enjoying some holiday time with the family. Hope you're doing well, Andy. In lieu of Andy, I have brought on Aaron Larsuel, who's been a regular on the show in Andy's absence a little bit. Aaron works in the NBA. And just a little side note here, Aaron has been texting me for 6 months to not overthink it, and Wiseman is the pick. So, Aaron, how you doing?
I'm well. Look at that introduction. Do I get to collect my flowers now? Is that what that is? Are we, and Andy's disappearance, or I'm calling it a disappearance, has nothing to do with the results of the first game. Is that right?
No. We actually, for those who want to hear Andy, we did do a live post-game reaction. It's on the Light Years premium feed. It went up last night. You guys can catch it. He's just going to be off for the next couple days. So,
Yes, James Wiseman. It's not even about not overthinking it, and I'm sure we'll get into this, but I saw the first six months that we've been talking about this, as you said, I saw an absolute ability for someone special. I think he is the best chance at someone special, more than LaMelo, more than Anthony Edwards. I thought that James Wiseman probably had the highest floor, but also had the highest chance of being a superstar. And that is what the Warriors have needed and need. So,
see, that's interesting. I actually wanted to talk about the game and then get into Wiseman later.
Let's flip it around.
Let's start on Wiseman right now, because the opening game, pretty disgusting, but there was one positive, and that was James Wiseman. So let's start here. He's kind of a mystery to most people. Three college games, haven't seen him play in well over a year. The past couple weeks, you've had these kind of cryptic,
messages from the Warriors about how great he looks in camp. I mean, it honestly feels like we've gone back 50 years in time where you don't get to see the footage and you're relying on like the newspaper to give you these little nuggets about what players look. So I know every Warrior fan was excited to see what he looked like in his first game. And I want to start here. Did he live up to your expectations? Did he exceed them? Give me your first thoughts on seeing him for the first time in an NBA game.
No, he matched my expectations. And I think what's important here is knowing as the Warriors, as of course you do and all of your listeners do, they are not ones that are going to like blow a lot of praise. Kerr is not going to. Especially now this is the important point. I didn't think what Kerr was saying was cryptic at all. There are going to be some guys like Ron Adams has been doing, you know, trying to say that Wiggins is a better defensive player than he is, you know, trying to help guys get in their heads. But Kerr doesn't do that. And Kerr very specifically tends the other direction, especially when it comes to rookies. We all like blame Kerr for being too beholden to his guys that aren't necessarily as good, but don't make mistakes, right? And he doesn't want to play young guys, doesn't want to play rookies. He wants the steady guys that he knows exactly what he's going to get from. So to hear Kerr not even be able to like withhold the effusive praise for him, I think is really meaningful. And I learned something being around in the NBA as long as I have been in practices and whatnot. When somebody comes in, you can tell immediately, like literally somebody's first, if they're a free agent, they go to a new team, they get drafted. You can tell immediately. You can't necessarily tell that somebody is going to be great, but you can tell that somebody either has it or doesn't have it. If they have it, they still may not be ready. But if a guy doesn't have it, you can see it immediately. Almost always, there's a million stories, but we're going to keep this short today. So the fact that all of the guys, you know, Steph, even Zaza and Sean Livingston and Kerr, as soon as they see this dude on the floor the first time, everybody's eyes light up. That tells you something. And so it like he met the expectations. He even probably exceeded my expectations. But again, my expectations for him are very, very high because as I've been telling you for months and months and months, I think he has a real chance to be a superstar.
Yeah, I mean, when Steve Kerr is mentioning David Robinson, I was like, whoa, you know, that's some high praise. Just to be clear, I agreed with you. He had the highest floor. I was not confident he had the highest ceiling. And who knows where this goes. But watching him last night, pretty clear I was underselling how high his ceiling is. Like, his combination of size and athleticism is simply not something you see every 2 to 3 drafts, honestly. You don't see guys 7 feet tall who move like that.
You don't see it ever. And that like struck me. Now, DeAndre Jordan's not you know, he doesn't move like he used to. He's not as explosive as he once was. But he is still a massive dude, right? He's still a monster. He's big and he's used to pushing guys around down in the paint. And James Wiseman is a 19-year-old and made him look small. Like James Wiseman is Rudy Gobert's size, but can move up and down and can run. And I think the other part, the part that like we all knew that, the size, the strength, the athleticism.
It's different to see it though.
It is different to see it, but there's two parts of it that gave people pause. One is I don't think people had the understanding of those two things are the two things you can't have. But he also has a good bit of skill to go with it, especially for a 7'1", 19-year-old. He gets himself in trouble because he's 19 years old and hasn't played it. But you could see it yesterday.
The hook shot comes to mind. That was definitely a rookie play.
With the offhand. But a few times he kind of got the ball at half court and tried to handle a little bit. Is that the best decision? Maybe not. But the fact that he has the ability to do those things is very tantalizing. And he's also like, he's a big guy, right? So we don't know, especially at the second pick, the league seems to be going away from that. We don't know if there's that value there. So I think that gave people pause. But his combination of size, speed, strength, and skill, there just isn't. There aren't those guys on planet Earth.
Yeah, there's that guy down in LA. And maybe Embiid in Philly, and that's about it. Even Embiid's not that athletic.
Embiid can't move like that. Anthony Davis can move like that, but But Wiseman is bigger than him,
right?
Maybe stronger than him and taller than him. He has a 9'6" standing reach. I mean, like,
Jesus. Yeah. I mean, that's
those
the
guys, they just don't exist.
The skill level was also was impressive to me because I don't want to take too much from the three games in college that we saw 14 months ago. It literally was 14 months ago.
Right.
You know, and that was mostly lower competition. So it's not like he really had to use skill. Like he literally just had to be athletic and dunk on them. Yeah. Other than Oregon, and he had the quintessential big man pick up two fouls, one of which was not really a foul and have to sit half the game situation. College is insufferable in that way. But that's a different discussion. We didn't really get to see it. And, you know, that's the two plays that stood out in my mind that really showed me like, no, he has the potential to be very skilled in addition to all the physical gifts he has was that dribble drive finger roll. You don't really see big men do that very much. Blew by, I believe it was DeAndre Jordan at that time, and just rolled it in. Great touch. And then there was the 3-point shot at the top of the key. You know, the form's still a little funky, but he's clearly got, he's got touch. There's good reason to believe he should be able to shoot it at a proficient enough clip.
Yeah. Well, I think there's a couple things there. One, it is a little slow. It's smooth, but it's slow.
Right.
But because he is so big and so tall, right, and has such, and again, this 9'6" standing reach.
Who's contesting it?
It's not going to be right. You're like, and he's going to be, and if he has that ability that we saw a little bit of, especially because he's left-handed, which people are going to have to get used to. If he has the ability to put it on the ground, he is, even if he's just like a mediocre, like slightly below average, but competent 3-point shooter, he's going to be able, as he develops, to be able to destroy closeouts. And frankly, I've talked about this a lot through the years, especially doing stuff with the Lakers, about Lonzo Ball. There is value in a willingness to shoot 3-point shots. Because if right, you're standing out there and somebody throws you the ball and you just won't shoot it and everybody knows you won't shoot it, it destroys your offense. It destroys your spacing. So,
I mean, and Warrior fans have seen a ton of that with Draymond, Iguodala in the playoffs.
Omri Caspi.
Yeah. I mean, Caspi's another level, but yeah, exactly. Guys are just like, look, you know, their first goal is to pass the ball or to cut. It's so not
just, the willingness to shoot those threes. And then after he made the one, you know, the next possession down, you know, you don't love the foot on the line too, but he's firing it up again. So, no, like long-term, is he solving the Warriors shooting issues? No, but you know, if he can become effective as a 3-point shooter, that will take some pressure off. He's probably already better than Draymond right now. So, that will probably take some pressure off of Steph in this, you know, the Warriors great search for shooting.
Let me ask this. This is just one game, not fair to compare him. Per se, but first impressions of him versus, let's just say, your first impressions of a rookie Anthony Davis, if you can remember back that far. I don't want to compare him to Anthony Davis because that's just really, I mean, that's like ceiling of ceilings if he hits a player of that level of impact. But I'm trying to think of the last big man who was skilled, who very clearly was going to be a good player. I guess you could throw Carl Anthony Towns into this too. They're both one and dones who were immediately good in NBA.
Yeah, but I think Wiseman is more similar to AD because of that athleticism.
Right.
But the other thing, like AD was, and this happens a lot, right? And the Warriors, right, the last now year have kind of looked like that. But there's a reason that these teams have the number one pick to go get Anthony Davis or have the number two pick to go, sure, get James Wiseman. And so generally those guys are kind of thrown in, and Anthony Davis was like thrown into the fire more and like sink or swim. So theoretically, I'm more impressed by what Wiseman did yesterday because, I mean, it didn't end up being that way, but theoretically, the games are going to matter more for this Warriors team than, you know, whatever that was, 2012, when Anthony Davis was drafted. So, do I think he's going to be Anthony Davis? No, but like Anthony Davis is probably, when he's all done, going to be a top 30 guy all time, top 40 guy all time. So is Wiseman on that trajectory? No, but I think he has even more. Now his defensive instincts are not, Anthony Davis has always had incredible defensive instincts. Yeah. Wiseman's defensive instincts are not there. He has even more size and athleticism, even than Anthony Davis, to possibly make up for some of those shortcomings.
Right.
And he's a really smart guy. But I like offense. Like, Anthony Davis couldn't shoot either. Like, he wouldn't. He wasn't trying to shoot as a rookie like that. So
Anthony Davis is also maybe the quickest big man I've ever seen in terms of just as a rookie. He was so fast.
Yeah, but and the other thing is, like, Anthony Davis is not height, but he is probably, like, he and James Wiseman are similarly sized now. You know, probably sure. like a similar weight. Wiseman may even be a little bigger than him, but. That was like, you're comparing grown man Anthony right, Davis right, right. to why? Well, I mean, like, again, like, these guys, even Anthony Davis, right? Like, these guys just don't exist. They, like, how many of those guys are there on even just planet Earth? Like, none.
Yeah, right? there's very few people who are 7 feet tall. Then when you say 7 feet with coordination and high end athleticism, it's like a handful.
But also, like. Right, like Rudy Gobert is, like, he's similar size with Rudy Gobert. Rudy Gobert, like, fell in the draft because he couldn't move, and he looked right. like all of his limbs work independently. Like,
right,
and still, like, Rudy Gobert is, he's better, but he can't really guard on the perimeter. But, like, again, those guys with that size, that strength, that speed, that coordination, they just don't exist. So that's why one of the reasons. That I was incredibly high on Wiseman. I thought he was a no-brainer number one pick coming into the draft. And, you know, last night's game I encouraged me even further a little bit. Now, like, at this point, I think Kerr needs to just, like, let it go at this point. Like,
right.
He has to play 30 whatever minutes. You just, like, he was their second best player last night by a wide margin. That was true even after his first shift where Kerr removed him very quickly. He was mm-hmm. the second best Warrior. So even if the season gets, whether the season goes well, he's in their top few guys and should be playing more. If the season doesn't go well, he should still be closing because he needs the reps. So I think that's going to be interesting. I mean, like, I've seen enough of Looney already, frankly.
Yeah, Andy was throwing it on our season preview pod. He thinks Looney will end up getting traded. Just because and this was before we saw Wiseman play, but it's like, if Wiseman's as big a part of their plans as he appears to be, and, you know, through one game, he clearly is, Looney's kind of the odd man out there. And he's, like, one of your only guys who you can actually use to match contracts to maybe get something back in return. Like, 'cause it's pretty much the roster is max contracts and vet minimums of Looney.
Right.
So on some level, Looney just being a $5 million contract allows you to kind of cobble something together to maybe get a shooter. I don't know what shooter you can get for, like, $7 million, but, you know, like, it's very clear. I guess this is a good point to transition to the game. It's very clear this roster is still a work in progress.
Yeah, I mean, that's putting it kindly. Now, look, I was on Twitter. We went back and forth on Twitter a little bit yesterday because I just don't – I think some of it is on Kerr. Like, the roster is a work in progress, right? And without Draymond and without Clay, like, there's just not enough talent.
Sure.
But I don't think they were being optimized that well anyway. I don't understand. Like, we all know that – the offense can't survive without Steph. So, and some of it's on Steph too, to be fair, but I don't understand all these guys that don't know how to play with Steph. One of the reasons Steph is so effective off the ball, or has been effective off the ball, is because of all the second and third and fourth actions that defenses and even individual defenders just can't keep up with him. Mentally, right. They can't keep up with him. Physically, they're not going to run with him all that time. But all of those guys that were smart enough to get to those things aren't on the team anymore, right? So these are guys that aren't necessarily high IQ guys to begin with, but also don't have the institutional knowledge of playing with Steph, knowing where he's going to be, knowing where to get to those second and third and fourth actions. And so all that time where Steph is just dribbling down and the first action is him just dumping the ball off and going running around,
right?
They're not going to get to those second and third and fourth actions. So every time that happens is a win for the defense, and it's a wasted possession for the Warriors because somebody other than Steph is going to take a shot on their own that Steph didn't create, which is a not as good of a shot as Steph could get. So I do think that the roster is flawed. I do think Draymond will help. I think the roster is flawed and obviously needs more shooting, but, like, A, Steve, play, you don't have a lot of shooting, but play those guys more, and B, you need to do stuff with Steph where it's the first action that gets to a Steph shot, not something that's going to drag on and Steph's going to run around, because those guys just aren't there anymore.
And we should note, Steve mentioned this all through preseason. He said, you know, I'm trying to find the exact quote, but he goes, you know, the play doesn't really start until Steph gives up the ball and starts moving. And it's the second half of the possession that really is hard for guys to adjust to, because you don't really have to do this on other teams. Other teams, it's really one to two actions. And Steph actually even mentioned it in his post game yesterday. We need to get better at, recognizing when I cut off ball, and you know, he's kind of alluding to the fact that, like, Pascal, Wiggins, these guys, you know, it's kind of like they get the ball and they're used to making one read. It's like pass or shoot. They're not really, thinking the game 3 to 4 plays down the line. So the real question is, like, do they start simplifying it, or does that just come to them over time?
But, I mean, like, here's the thing. You hope it comes to them over time. But, like, Kevin Durant isn't there anymore. Sean Livingston, Andre Iguodala, Draymond. Yeah, like, those guys aren't there.
Right.
So, yes, you hope that through playing with Steph, guys are going to learn that, because it took all of those guys time to learn it. However, in the interim, like, you're still trying to win basketball games, theoretically, right? So in the interim, you have to go to the stuff that is most likely to work. And that stuff is high screen and roll with Steph. Steph shooting 13 to 15 threes a game. Some of them are going to be bad shots. Some of them are going to be contested. I don't really care. They're still better options than everybody else. And the problem is, like, when Steph is on the floor, he needs to be taking every shot. Or if he's not, he's the one deciding who is taking every shot. Because when he's not on the floor, they're going to be a disaster. So when he's on the floor, he's got to be pressing it. So then some of it's on him. I put most of it on Kerr, but some of it's on him. Also, like, if the second and third best shooter on the team are going to be Marquese Chris, that are going to play, are going to be Marquese Chris and
Wiseman,
then frankly, if Draymond isn't ready on Christmas, then Chris should start at 4. Because he's good. At least he'll shoot it, right?
Like, right.
Like Juan Toscano-Anderson, he's not an NBA player. Pascal has been a disaster recently. His shot is broken.
If he does come around, it's not going to be as a shooter.
And Mulder should play more. Like, and Lee should play more. Like, the guys that have a chance to make a jump shot should play. Obviously, Wiggins and Oubre are going to play. They were both awful yesterday, but obviously those two guys are going to play. But, like, I guess my point is, I think the Warriors are going to be okay. I just think it's going to take longer for them to figure out how to all the beautiful game stuff with Steph. So in the meantime, Steve Kerr and Steph need to adjust to some of the Steph is one of the baddest MFers on the planet, and theoretically is probably the greatest offensive player in NBA history. So he needs to go get some buckets.
And this is something that, you know, it's one thing. They were going to probably lose to the Nets and Bucks no matter what they did. Those are two of the five best teams in the league. But it's the following week when they have the Chicago Bulls, the Detroit Pistons. Those are games you can't give away. You can't be giving those games away trying to figure it out when you can just win those games if you let Steph run 50 high pick and rolls. So, I mean, we got a few days until we get to kind of a critical mass of getting really frustrated. But if they're throwing away those games, trying to do something that may never make sense with this roster, then you got to start wondering if they're really serious about making the playoffs.
So
we're not there yet, though.
So I guess I have a slightly different opinion. Now, I don't really – I was a Warriors fan growing up, but I've been – worked for NBA teams. I've been in the NBA, covered the NBA. People that you do that a lot, like – some of your fandom, it's like hard, right? But I still watch the Warriors very closely because it's a team I grew up, I've loved, you know, my entire life, right? So I pay attention.
Once from the Bay, always from the Bay.
And frankly, I disagree. I think it was frustrating. It was critical mass already because this isn't the first time we've seen these things.
Sure.
Right? And these have been issues for years, right? The Warriors have never been able to score without Steph for years. And still, and that's partially a roster thing, but Kerr has kept the high pick and roll, him and Draymond high pick and roll, or him and KD high pick and roll, like, in his pocket. And I mean, like, theoretically for the playoffs, and then doesn't even really deploy it in the playoffs. So it's confusing, like, philosophically, it's confusing to me why you don't use your best offensive weapon in the best way. And so it seems like I'm fearful of the hard-headedness. No, I think Steve Kerr's a really good coach, but like this isn't a new thing that we're seeing here.
No, so I think there's
concern.
A Phil Jackson disciple through and through, and with that comes stubbornness and belief in your system above all else. So you got to take the good with the bad with him. But you are right. Like considering how last year went and how it looked, you know, I don't think we're jumping the gun in wondering, is Steve going to make the adjustments necessary or when are they going to come around?
Yeah. Yes. So like, as much as I get into, you know, like random NBA, well, it wasn't a random NBA game, but like I watch, obviously, you know, worship of the Lakers, but I like the Warriors, I watch as closely as just about anybody other than the Lakers. And like, even as just somebody who enjoys basketball, somebody who loves NBA basketball, somebody the game has been really good to, I was just frustrated. I was frustrated by it, even not so much like as a former Warrior fan. Like I was just frustrated by it because it seemed like it was bad, but so much of it was like systemic and it just like was dumb. It was just like, what do you like? This is simple stuff. Do it.
Agreed. Let's see how fast it goes, but I do agree with you. Know, I agree with you. I've talked to this ad nauseum. Let's pay some bills and then let's actually get into yesterday's game a little more after that. The NBA is back in full swing. You might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads to totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you options to wager more than anything else. You can get in their season opening bonuses today and start wagering on wins, division, and championship futures all day and every day. Head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all the great signing up bonuses. Don't forget to use the promo code BLUEWIRE at betonline.ag. That's Blue Wire, all one word. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. 2020 has reshaped how we work, and it's almost over. Businesses across the globe are challenged to be at their most efficient, which means every hire is critical. Indeed is here to help. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only need to pay for what you need, and you can pause your account at any time, and there is no long-term contracts. And now, Indeed's new way of matching you with candidates instantly delivers a short list of quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job criteria. You can contact them the moment you sponsor a job, making Indeed the only job site that can move as fast as you do. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners free $75 credits to boost your job post score, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Try Indeed with the free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is the best offer anywhere. Go right now, Indeed.com/BlueWire. Offer valid through December 31st. Terms and conditions may apply. All right, now let's get to last night's game. I feel like we got to start on Kevin Durant here. Did he even tear his Achilles? Are we sure that he tore it? Like, I don't know. I didn't know it was possible to look that good off of an Achilles tear. Like, Wes Matthews and Rudy Gay, I think, have made really successful returns from Achilles tears, but they obviously are not the players they were beforehand. Kevin Durant, I mean, it looked like, it was 2019. He's the best player in the world. Nothing's changed.
The only way I can describe it is he looked like Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant looked like Kevin Durant. Now, I think it is an interesting question. And on the TNT broadcast, I think Charles brought this up a little bit in the postgame show. But, he theoretically could have played in the bubble, and that would have been, a year or so.
Right.
Off.
Oh, and so, that's a good point, yeah.
So the fact that, he tore, the calf in May and then finished it off, the Achilles in June. So this is now 18 months off of it, as opposed to, 12 months off of it that most guys tend to come back. And, I imagine the Warriors are going to push for, you know, and try it, and Clay will too, to try to have Clay be ready to start next season. So, which will be like 12 months, which is kind of normal these days. So the extra 6 months obviously is a big deal. I also think that if there is, I mean, there is only one Kevin Durant, but if there is like an archetype of a player, of an NBA player, and of a human body type that is going to succeed off of that devastating, you know, the career killer injury, it is Kevin Durant. You know, he's a 7-foot jump shooter. You know, he still had his, you know, coming off closeouts, one dribble, getting dunks on people. And is a really good weak side shot blocker, but like he's a 7-foot guy, like we were talking about with Wiseman, with a huge wingspan, and he just is a jump shooter. He's a jump shot maker and is really thin. Looks to be in better shape than we've seen him. He's always been a really thin guy, but looks to be in better shape than we've seen him.
Yeah, he looks like he lost a few pounds.
Yeah, and so like a thin seven foot guy that, you know, is going to shoot that jumper in your eye over and over and over. If there's a guy that's going to come back, it's going to be him. And, you know, I again, the only way to describe it to me is he looked like Kevin Durant.
That is a good point, that indirectly the COVID, you know, kind of messing up the sports calendar probably benefited him because it bought him a few extra months. Mm-hmm. You could say the same thing for John Wall, who tore his Achilles in January of 2019. Yeah. It was around Christmas.
Yeah, that sounds right. Yeah.
You know, he was approaching 2 years of not having to play NBA basketball, right. And you know, who knows how good he'll be, but he looks athletically like John Wall.
Well, it doesn't look like he's going to play tonight. Yeah, in the Rockets opener.
Another podcast. But you know, in preseason he looked physically well.
He did.
So
he did.
I'm wondering if the Warriors will, because they're going to be in a tough spot. They can't. Give Clay an extra 6 months, because an extra 6 months would literally be the 2021-2022 season. If you're talking about giving an 18-month layoff. But it seems like this added layoff may have given KD a little more life in his leg than, let's just say, if he had to play 12 months after he tore it. Maybe he'd be dealing with some of the issues that guys like Wesley Matthews and Rudy Gay had to deal with their first year back, which was a lot of minutes monitoring and sitting games and stuff that it doesn't appear like KD's going to have to be as subjected to.
No, I mean, I think it's I didn't know. I mean, obviously we saw pickup stuff and heard about how good he looked. And then, yeah, he looked really good in the preseason, but you never quite know, right? And like with Steph, we don't quite know what you're going to get. But I think it's like, I thought that they're, and I still think that they could theoretically be a mess. I don't think they'll guard anybody,
right.
Brooklyn. But I, just from what I saw yesterday, was enough for me to elevate them. I think they're right there to win the East. I had them back a little bit because, again, I think there's like, both of them are weirdos. Him and Kyrie are both weirdos.
Sure.
Nobody's going to guard anybody. They just don't have any guys that guard on the roster.
And we can even talk about that. I mean, the Warriors had an abysmal shooting night. This isn't a great shooting roster, but any way you slice it, I mean, they were 10 for 32 on three-pointers defined as open or wide open.
Yeah, it was 6 of 18. So
6 of 18 on wide open, right. 4 of 14 on just open. Open is defined as 4 to 6 feet.
Right.
It's a little dicey, but yeah.
And then wide open is the closest defender is 6 feet or farther from the shooter. And the ones that stick out to me is, I mean,
Wiggins, like, at the beginning of the game.
Yeah, just Steph just butt naked corner threes too. Just wide, butt naked open threes. And they just weren't Oubre a couple too. But again, like you have
feet
to shoot set those.
Very like almost too open, you know?
And those are the ones that are the ones that stop the game from getting away from you. If Wiggins makes two of those, even one of those, because of those times, those are the ones that were like, the game, it prevents the game from becoming a laugher and getting away from you. All the, like, the other stuff, Pascal's just getting abused on defense.
Right.
He was terrible. Looney, he just is who he is, and it's not good enough. But, like, those guys, those little plays here and there are not the ones that stop that freight train. But those wide open threes that, you know, make a 7-0 run, 7-3, and don't let it get to 15-0. Like, those are the ones that are killers when you just miss those.
Right. There were 6 of 25 from 3 through the first three quarters of the game. Obviously, fourth quarter was garbage time, so we're not going to count that. Yeah,
but how many shots did, like, he turned it on, and when he came back in the second quarter, the second half of the second quarter, he shot a little bit, you know, got a few up. But how many shots did Steph take in the first quarter? Four? Five?
In the first quarter, he took eight.
Oh, okay.
Which is surprising, because my eye test tells me similar to yours, which was he was trying to get everyone going early when he probably should have been he should have done it the other way around. He should have been looking for his shot first.
My favorite shot of his, I think it was his first three, his first attempt from three. I think it was the second shot of the game where it was just a 35-foot bomb. And I was thinking, oh, you know, him and Dame were talking about they're shooting from the logo. But, like, that's a good shot for Steph Curry. The Warriors running their offense are not going to get a better one. I think another kind of underrated factor is they're a team that wants to get out and run, and
they couldn't get a stop.
No, you give up 40 whatever in the first quarter. Like, you can't take the ball out of the net and run. It's not going to work. So then it forces them into half court offense, and their half court offense, even with Steph, isn't going to be good enough.
And just to tie it home, 6 of 25 through three quarters from three. Brooklyn was 12 of 25. That's an 18-point swing. They made six more threes on the same amount of attempts. That's pretty much the margin of the game right there. Yeah, Brooklyn was going to win either way, but the Warriors can't be destroyed from the three-point line the way they are and expect to compete in general.
No, and right, if Wiggins makes one or two of those wide-open ones.
And Oubre makes a couple of those open ones, and Steph makes a couple.
Then, right, yeah. Steph is 4 of 10 or 5 of 10. You're like, oh, okay. Like, it's the Warriors aren't going to win, but, like, it doesn't seem like a laugher.
Yeah, because, like, this type of shooting performance yesterday, they would probably lose to anyone. But if those things happen against, you know, a more run-of-the-mill NBA team, not one of the four or five favorites to win the title, yeah, the difference between Wiggins and Steph and Oubre hitting a couple wide-open shots is probably the difference between them winning and losing.
And it's also, like, that happening, you know, Steph is going to be Steph. Steph is going to make 42% of his threes.
Right.
I literally hope he takes 15 a game. He's going to make 42% of them. I think the question is if Wiggins and Oubre make 29, I don't know if they were terrible yesterday, but if they make 30% of their threes, the Warriors are in trouble. If they make 33 or 34% of their threes combined, the Warriors are a playoff team. I think it pretty much is that simple, because I think we know what we're going to get. Assuming Steph and Draymond, you know, play most of the year, I think it really just the few percentage points from three from those two guys is what either, like, sinks or makes the season.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I want to give one – there was one Steve Kerr quote here, which – I think we need to talk about. He said, I didn't like the level of competition. I just felt like we were out there in the first half. I actually thought we'd compete harder, play better defense. We didn't do that. We didn't get into their airspace in the first half. As someone who watched the entire preseason, one of the biggest takeaways I had from the preseason was I was pretty happy with their effort level. Like, it's very clear this isn't a roster you can roll out there and just win on pure talent, you know, like the way the Brooklyn Nets can or the way the Warriors could for years when they had KD, right? They're going to need to be a team who outworks you. And I don't know what they looked shook, honestly. There's no other way around. Yeah,
they got punked. Immediately, they got punked.
They could not hit a shot at the beginning of the game, and that lack of confidence seemed to just permeate to the defensive end. Next thing you know, guys aren't getting in there on defense. Like, Oubre, for whatever you think of him defensively, is someone who does get physical and is kind of pest-like. He really wasn't that yesterday. Wiggins has typically been better defensively since he's been to the Warriors. Yesterday, he kind of looked like the dude that, you know, we all kind of lamented in Minnesota. And you can just keep going down the line.
Yeah, and I think like Pascal, I've been harping on him a lot, but he's just given up straight line drives over and over and over. And he's a very, like, well-built physical body. He's strong and athletic, but he doesn't do that. On the offensive glass, he uses that, but that's about the only place he uses his physicality is on the offensive glass. Like, he doesn't play with any force. He doesn't put his body on anybody. And I think
slower yesterday than I remember him being last year. I don't know if he's in the best shape.
No, he looked heavy. But I think the other thing for him is he looked hesitant even more than heavy. And I think it's because the rebuilding his jumper and then changing his role from go ahead, take as many shots as you want right. to be a complimentary piece in the second unit, even though he started yesterday. I think that's messing with his head. And look, there's also a reason guys get drafted with 41st. There's a reason guys get drafted 41st, right? And play whatever 4 years in college. So I think that Oubre is going to help that. Wiggins is, we know who he is. He's just going to float some games. Some games he'll play with force offensively and score a bunch of points, but he's never really going to play with force defensively. And some games he's just going to float around. Wiseman, I think, will learn to do that. I think that's another right. reason he's so important is because the Warriors for years have not had athletes, have not had physicality. You know, they like Iguodala is pretty strong, good athlete, but like since those dynasty teams right, the last right. year, there haven't been really like
running. They got old and slow. Guys. They were getting by on IQ and skill over athleticism.
Right. And like, you know, Livingston couldn't jump. They didn't bring David, like they, and all of the guys that they brought in, all of the late first round draft picks, they were trying to find guys that could just help a little bit on the margins in those years, guys that could play guard a little bit, shoot a little bit.
But Jordan Bell.
Poole or Evan, right? Or yeah. like in McCaw, like they didn't go get those guys that can turn into the guys that they need now because
right.
they were focused on winning right now. And so the development kind of fell off. I also think, though, to be fair, I think that's one place because, look, it's hard when you're sitting on the when a coach is on bench telling you guys play, you know, that like that message and that voice kind of fails.
It's drowned out pretty quick.
Right. So I think that's a big – the organizing offensively and defensively, the ability to get Steph some of those second and third actions is what Draymond is going to do. But more important than all of that, Draymond is going to give them life. He's always been their toughness. He's always been their energy. And so him throwing some bodies around and elbowing people in the mouth and boxing out and yelling at his teammates –
I mean,
I think it's going to bring some force to the team.
We saw that with the Clippers last year. You know, a coach can only do so much to get a team going. At some point, someone on the floor has to be the guy who holds their teammates accountable for energy.
100%. And I think like Draymond was always their attitude and was
right.
generally a lot of their swagger, all of their toughness, right? Like Draymond's not getting punked. You might beat him, right? But Draymond is not getting punked.
No, Draymond would have either gotten the energy level up or got himself ejected yesterday. One or the other's happening.
My guess is both.
Yeah.
But so I think that is one way in which I think Draymond's going to be more important on offense than defense because they just have no idea. Like they just don't have any idea on offense how to play with Steph. And he is one guy that does. This team, in addition to lacking shooting, is severely passing deficient.
Right. That's the other reason the offense doesn't make sense. Like, I don't know why you're asking Kelly Oubre or Andrew Wiggins to, you know, make reads you would ask Andre Iguodala to. It's not really their forte.
No. And I think, I think if Dre plays on Christmas, I don't think the Warriors are going to win, but I think they fight them. And I think sure. that I think what you will see is, and I texted you this yesterday or the day before. I think it's possible. I thought it was possible that the Warriors would split because I thought Steph would have 48 in one of these games. And I think
the same way he didn't hit anything last night, he's just as likely to hit 12 threes.
Yeah, he'll go 16 of 20 from the floor, and it'll be 10 of 12 from deep. You know. So I think, especially if Dre is back, I hope you're going to see some high pick and roll right at the beginning. Yes, that's probably going to get Giannis switched on to Steph a little bit more than you'd like, but like, so be it. Giannis can be foul prone. So be it.
Having Giannis out of the play 30 feet from the rim probably helps you get more layups too.
So. Also, yeah, I don't know who's going to get them, but also true. So I think that like the organizing, especially on offense, is going to be big for Dre, and he's just not going to get he doesn't care Giannis or LeBron, he's not going to get punked. So some of that will bleed over into his teammates.
If I had to guess, I think they're not going to play him on Christmas just to give him a couple extra days. They play the Bulls on Sunday and the Pistons next Tuesday. I think they'll probably be very content if they can get a then get a split through this opening road trip.
So fine. But yeah. This season's 72 games, not 82 games.
Sure.
And this isn't the 3 years ago Warriors where you can coast in the playoffs, giving games away in 82.
Sure. Sure.
It's a fight for the playoffs team in the best of circumstances. And it's 72 games.
No, that's fair. I mean, I hope he plays on Christmas because they felt so lifeless yesterday. You know, if Steph was hitting shots, they would have had a little life, but with zero defensive resistance, it would have just been more fun for the viewer. It wouldn't have been competitive either way. So
is there an official Light Years take on the Steph like half braids?
Steph can do what he wants. I don't have an opinion on it. I'm not.
That's fair.
I'm not used to it. It's a little midlife crisis-y, but you know, let him do what he wants. So. I don't know. We're both older than him, so I don't think we can make fun of him for being old.
No, not that. I just want to know if you thought it was a good look. No, I don't. It's not about being old.
A few of the Light Years listeners think he's put on too much muscle, and it's affecting his touch and his overall fluidity of his game. You think that's a thing? I mean, we know he's been working out like a maniac. I mean, he's always going to. Steph's a pro's pro. You'll never see a Steph Curry is out of shape story. But I am wondering, like, he looks bigger than he has in the past. That was a focus area for him, so he could get his shot off easier, be a little stronger. He's aware of the bird of kind of the weight he has to carry in terms of just the offense, right?
Physically and
exactly.
Literally and figuratively, yeah.
Do you think there's anything to that, or is that grasping at straws because we're looking for any reason for them to be bad?
So I think that I don't think that's a thing. I think he has done that. So he has to. He may be in the best cardio shape of anybody in the league, and he has to be to do all that, the second, third, fourth actions that nobody else will do that we've been talking about.
I mean, he runs a marathon every game. Yeah.
Right, like everybody else, right? Like everybody else, those ISO scorers that Steph can be, when they give the ball up, James Harden's a great example, Russell Westbrook's a great example, even
LeBron.
Harden's
the opposite extreme, but yes.
But even LeBron, you know, I did some, crunch some numbers on this a couple years ago. I think it was LeBron's first year in with the Lakers. He was, when he didn't have the ball, he was the slowest guy in the league. He just didn't, like, he didn't move much. And so that is one of Steph's great advantages. So he has to work out all the time to be in the cardio shape for that. The added muscle, I think it is probably because Steph gets beat up a lot. Steph's a small guy. He goes to the basket a lot. He gets beat up a lot. So to take those hits around the rim.
Right.
Some of it, he flops a lot too, to be fair. And he plays all that stuff up. But to take all that punishment that he gets going to the rim, as a very small human being in an NBA world, I think it's to kind of absorb some of that contact. Now, I think it's a fair to ask what's going on. I'm not worried about his 3-point shooting at all. He'll be able to shoot. He could literally shoot 40 to 45% in an NBA game until he's 60, literally.
Right.
But I do have some concern. One of the things that made him such an elite offensive player, and in my opinion, at his peak, the greatest offensive player in NBA history, was he was an incredible finisher also. And so I'm a little bit worried about his finishing numbers around the rim have been steadily declining over the last few years. Maybe that has something to do with that added weight. He's not as flexible or he's not as good around the rim. He's not getting he's not getting there as quickly because he's carrying a little more weight, or not getting up as high because I don't know what that is exactly, but that's a little bit of a concern for me.
I wonder, his touch has been a little off, but I've kind of taken the perspective of let him play 15 games in a row, guys. Like, he literally hasn't played 15 games in a row in like 2 full years. You know, like it's not like he's missing stuff bad. It's just like it's split second timing stuff that it doesn't matter how much you train. It's just not the same as a game. So you just have to go through reps.
And you know what? It's like, we know who Steph is, right? And I think we've seen enough in preseason and then saw enough yesterday to say that Steph is still Steph. Is there enough around him to, like, he's not going to have the freedom he had before. He never will. I mean, the space and such. But is the talent around him good enough to give him enough so that he can still be Steph? I think so, but I don't know yet. It's reminiscent to me of, God, I guess it was 2 or 3 years ago when Klay started the year you know, and he was like 2 for his first 38 from three. And like, people, oh, yeah,
what's
going
on? 2019. He's like shooting 33% from three through Christmas.
Yeah, but I'm like, okay, look, like, it's Clay. Clay didn't forget how to shoot all of a sudden. And then, you know, and then he goes to Chicago and, you know, is 14 for 19 or something like that from three, breaks the record, right? Warriors scored, I think it was 90 or 95 in the first half. So I think people, like, it may not be Christmas, but in the next few games here, Steph is going to explode. You know, he's going to have 23 in the third quarter. He's going to make 8 or 9 or 10 or 11 threes. Right. And everybody's going to be like, okay, what are we doing? This is Steph.
Yeah. By the way, that Clay story, I was watching that game at the gym. I was running on a treadmill. I nearly fell off the treadmill because it was like, what, you know, when he starts hitting shots, you get excited. I nearly tripped all over myself. So, you know,
I was in a Buffalo Wild Wings watching that, just cackling because it was like silliness. And then he shortly thereafter had 10 threes here at Staples Center against the Lakers. And I was so, he was like, was 10 for 10. He made his first 10. And I was so happy for him because I'm very fond of and close with Michael Thompson, who does the radio for the Lakers. And so in my travels with the Lakers, I get to, you know, like hide my little pieces of Warrior fandom by just saying I'm hanging out with Michael and watching Clay. But Michael had never seen him have any of his good games, any of his big games. So I was like, just thinking of Michael and going up to Michael as Clay is 10 for 10 from deep. So that was for me personally, that was even more exciting than the 14 in Chicago. But
nice. Let's end on this. Okay. Opening night could not have gone worse for the Warriors. What do you want to see?
Steph didn't get hurt. It could have gone worse.
Let's not put that into the universe.
And Wiseman was a positive.
Wiseman lived up to all the hype and then some. I think everyone should be at least excited that the Warriors have a player who, I mean, he's 19. They have a player they can build around as Steph starts aging. That's a positive. Anyway, what do you want to see? But in the short term, what do you want to see from them on Christmas and on the rest of this road trip just to show that they're moving in the correct direction?
I guess I want to see a from Steph, partially, more so from Steve Kerr, but from Steph partially, let's say it's like 80-20 Steve Kerr and Steph, I want to see them recognize and accept that the world is different. That, right? He says like...
Right. Oh, that's Kerr, a great way to put it.
Kerr used to say, was it last year, right?
Like, this is the real NBA.
Right, yeah. This is the real NBA. Okay, well, this is the real NBA, so then you have to do the things that those other people do in the real NBA, right? Like, there's been, and Warrior fans have made fun of him for years. We've made fun of James Harden for years, right? For like, oh, he plays this way. It's just him and a bunch of dudes. Or LeBron, it's just him and a bunch of dudes.
Right.
Those guys were still able, like, and people, myself included, put Steph in that category. I think he's better than Harden. I think he has the best offensive season ever. It was
Steph will never put his whole team on the COVID list by being selfish. That is true.
Fair. So I think it is partially on Steph. I think it is more on Steve Kerr, but except they're saying the right, like, oh, this is different. They're saying the right things, but then falling into those habits of, well, this is how we play. And we have the guy, you don't have the guys to do that anymore. So, I would like to see an acceptance and then an implementation of the world is different. So we have to play, right? Like you say about football coaches, good college coaches, NFL coaches.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
You don't have your, like, we want to run. We're going to throw the ball 60 times
a
game.
Are we about to go an hour on Kyle Shanahan now?
Oh God. I can give you 2 hours. But so like I want the system to be blended to the talent. And I don't think either one of them has done a great job of that yet.
That's the funniest thing, because Kerr has been openly talking about how they're going to play. I don't want to call it more traditional, but more like other teams in the NBA, more spacing, more pick and roll, less of the motion offense, because that's the roster they have. And that kind of got me excited, not because I dislike the system, just because it was a recognition of the reality of the roster. And then they go out there on opening night and it's like all that lip service just to run out the same thing we saw at the beginning of last year, which was, you know, an offense that just is ill-suited for the roster you have.
Yeah, so. The question last year was, right, Steph played those first four games. The Warriors were terrible. Like, right. Is that the real Warriors? It was the rest of last year. And I didn't think so coming into this year, but it was reminiscent of that.
Sure.
Right? Like, the Clippers just I can't remember if there's language restrictions.
They punked them arguably worse than the Bucks or the Nets.
Yeah. Side. Yeah. And then you say, okay, like, the Clippers should be really good. The Nets, okay, should be really good. And then they came back, I think,
OKC.
It was their second game.
It was OKC. OKC.
And we thought OKC was going to be terrible. And OKC was up, like, 23-5 on them in the first quarter. So, I have one toe dipped in the water. Like, okay, this is, like, what it is. This is the Warriors now. And, like, Steph can't drag them by himself. But he's also not getting any help. I don't even mean getting help with other guys. I mean, he's not getting any help being able to being put in position to drag them by himself. And I don't know if he's willing to do it, but he's not being put in a position to do it, and he's not being asked to do it.
I think that's one of the more frustrating things about last year is, you know, he broke his hand in the fourth game in second quarter. Anyway, the point is we never got to see it kind of evolve into what it should have been, which was eventually like, all right, we're just going to let Steph and D'Lo kind of run pick and rolls and see what happens there. I think that's inevitably what would have happened if Steph stayed healthy for the whole year. Obviously he didn't. And through one game of Wiseman, it was very much worth it for him not to.
But if you think that,
yeah.
why didn't we see it yesterday?
I don't know. It's
like, even when it was a game, how much high pick and roll do you see from Steph?
At this point, it's very clear it's not Kerr's preferred way to play basketball. So there's some stubbornness here.
Too bad.
There's also Steph, though. I mean,
yeah, right.
Steph likes to play the way the Warriors played. He likes to float between on and off ball because he's uniquely amazing at it. Like, there's no one else who could play the way he played during the Warriors dynasty years. Like, no one skill set is really built to play. Like, LeBron couldn't play that way. You wouldn't want to use LeBron that way either. But
you're absolutely right. But that's why I said it's partially on Steph. But, like, okay, like, too bad.
This right, is right. Like, so you want them to bring it back?
You can't play. You can't do that. Like, oh, this I prefer on and off the ball. But if you know if it's me and you and Andy and
Producer Ben and, at the center.
Right, who like, we can't get you the ball, so it doesn't matter.
Right.
Like,
no, I hear what you're saying.
Ecosystem. So what's going to work in this ecosystem?
So we'll end it there. We want to see recognition that they understand the world that they're living in. We want them to understand that it's 2020 and Kelly Oubre is not Andre Iguodala. And Andrew Wiggins is not Klay Thompson. Well, he was getting some nice Klay looks there.
Yeah.
All right, we'll end it here. Thanks for coming on. We'll have you on soon.